Streaming live 24/7. RadioInfluence.com.
He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top. Wow. And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome in to the MMA Report podcast right here on Radio Influence. Of course, I am Jason Floyd of the MMAReport.com. Of course, momentarily going to be joined by Daniel Galvan as we are going to preview UFC 219, which goes down on Saturday night inside the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Also, we're going to talk about our New Year's resolutions for MMA, basically going to talk about some of the things we'd love to see happen in MMA in 2018. Plus, going to have two interviews here this week on the podcast. We're going to talk to Kyle Bochniak, who returns to the UFC Octagon coming up in January at UFC 220. Of course, that'll be on January 20th. On that same night at Bellator 192, Henry Corrales is going to be taking on Georgie Karahanyan. So we'll talk to Henry about his fight coming up. But of course, those interviews are coming up here later on in the podcast. But right now, I'm going to bring in my colleague at the MMAReport.com, Daniel Galvan. Daniel, how was the holiday season for you, man?
Jason, it was a sad holiday season because I had an entire weekend without a UFC event, and I had no idea what to do with myself. I had to spend time with my family, Jason. Can you believe that nonsense?
I was in Charlotte. I'll tell you, actually, we kind of stumbled upon a little arcade bar that was pretty cool. Bunch of old school games, NFL Blitz, NBA Jams. You're probably too young. You don't remember those games in the arcade?
Yeah. Unless you're talking about Halo or Call of Duty, those are my old school games. So I don't know what archaic video games you are talking about. But NBA Jam, that sounds quiet. I of course kid, Jason. I was born a little after that time, but I certainly appreciate old school slamma jamma.
It seems like these arcade bars are kind of making a comeback here. I've gone to Charlotte many times. I've never seen that before, but had a good time, and had the broadcast there in Charlotte. I would say this: I got back Sunday night. I had every intentions of staying up, and I was going to watch that UFC 218 rebroadcast, but I fell asleep.
Yeah, it really is hard in 2017 to rewatch fights unless you're doing it for like a purpose. Like you're looking up what a fighter you're about to preview has done. But just to rewatch fights just for the sake of it in 2017 with all the mixed martial arts we've gotten, it's very much like how you may overstuff yourself at the Christmas table. But it's good that you got back in time, man, for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Did you have a good day for Christmas, or what did you do? Do you not celebrate Christmas? Is that just
No, we do. Did my wife's family around lunchtime, and then did my parents at nighttime, and had a good Christmas. It was a nice kind of a day off for me. I really don't know if there's a such thing as a day off in my world and in what I do, but no, I had a great time. Look, for me, as you know, we were talking about this in the broadcast booth while we were off air on Sunday. It's like, you know, when you're a kid, Christmas is like the day that you just can't wait for. But as an adult, it's obviously not the same feeling, but for me, it's more, my enjoyment is seeing, my nieces and nephews open their presents and seeing their reactions to what they got. I mean, that's kind of the enjoyment I get out of it.
That sounds so horrifying. Like, why would I care about what some young child thinks? You know, I'm a purely selfish person. So to me, even as I die, like in my late 90s, I would assume that the wings finally catch up to me, all I will care about is my own presence. I want to be 84 years old and look forward to that UFC Fight Pass subscription I will get. You know, I don't know what Fight Pass will be like, and then maybe it'll be like some hologram. But Jason, all this selflessness, really, really, I don't understand. To me, Christmas is a great holiday, but obviously it has the one pitfall. It is a day when Buffalo Wild Wings is not open, which is, in fact, a shame. But regardless, Jason, I can't get down with this whole the joy of giving. To me, it's all about getting.
Now I did get a new TV. I got a Samsung TV, and as I was setting it up, today. I noticed there's a UFC app on there, so I gotta maybe test it out. I mean, is the UFC app on Samsung good, or should I stick with the Fire Stick, or should I stick with the Xbox One in terms of watching the Fight Pass prelims?
Man, I would go with the UFC app just to check it out. And fortunately, honestly, this is a pretty good UFC Fight Pass prelims from what I want to see. If you look at UFC 219,
I think it's ultimately going to be prelim. I don't think we're going to.
Oh, good point. Good point. Oh, which one do you think you think they're going to put the Vitoria Akhmedov fight or Elliot De La Rosa on the?
I was going to bring that up. And of course, we should note, as of the recording of this podcast, the UFC has not officially come off and said Jimmy Rivera is off the card, but that's all indication that he's no longer going to be on that fight card. Of course, we're going to get into that. But I was going to bring up, which fight gets elevated up to the main card. I think there was three fights that jumped out to me. Vitory Akhmedov was one of them. The other one was Dan Hooker, Mark Dykes, or Miles Jury versus Rick Glenn. I'd probably think they go Jury Glenn just because a little bit of name value there.
Yeah, I think looking at that lineup, Jury Glenn is the fight I would go with. If you're just looking at but you can't go wrong with Diakis Hooker either, because I think of those four fighters, and it's not like a big gap in name value. Miles Jury is probably the bigger name. I think Mark Diakis is just such an amazingly exciting fighter to watch, and the fight with Hooker may eventually be a fight of the night. But because there is no clear cut, fight that sticks out as like this has to be on the main card, there really isn't a wrong answer. When you look, it does seem like, and this may be the problem with this UFC 219 card, is every fight is something you could do without. So at the end of the day, I think the call is probably going to be the featherweight matchup between Jury and Glenn. Like, you could pick and choose any of the six prelim fights. And usually when you have those, I would assume the Roundtree fight is locked in on FS1.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you got the main events there. So you pick and choose any of them. I don't think you go wrong. Yeah, I wouldn't mind going with Smolka or Nikola either. But I think the strategy may be put a fight on there that you think may garner a finish.
I think, when I look up and down this 219 card, and particularly with the pay-per-view, I do kind of feel like this is a nice little pay-per-view. To me, ultimately, it's the main event and co-main event is what's drawing me to the television set on Saturday night. In terms of, obviously, Cyborg, Holm, Nurmagomedov, Barbosa, but Condit, Magny would probably be my number three fight.
Yeah, man, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Cavillo, and I think the Condit Magny fight and the Cavillo Esparza fight is interesting because of one fighter involved. Even though, spoiler alert, I may think Magny may beat Carlos Condit, I'm really looking forward to this fight just to watch Carlos Condit fight again. It's been a major question, and then for Cynthia Cavillo, I mean, she's the main reason I want to watch that fight, to see her upside against a testy veteran in Carlos Esparza. So those are one fighter fights for me where I really just want to see what that fighter looks like.
I had a chance to watch the piece that MMAfighting.com did with Carlos Condit, where Esther Lynn had gone to Albuquerque and had breakfast with them. And, I think there was a lot of question marks with Carlos and where the mind is. And when you watch that interview, you can tell this is a guy that, he's not one foot out the door. I think that was kind of one of the thought people had on him. But to me, that's a very interesting fight. I mean, Carvillo, I mean, it's a step up in competition taking on Carlos Esparza. When I look at the prelims, does a lot jump out to me? I mean, I Jury Glenn, it kind of jumps out to me. Smolka and Nikolai, of course, this is Nikolai's first fight since 2015. How does Smolka rebound after losses? Of course, he's been very open and honest about things outside of there. I mean, I look at those final two prelims on FS1, saying Diakis and Hooker and Roundtree's fight stay there. I kind of feel like those are in a way kind of set up to kind of be those type of fights that offer you a finish that if you were on the fence about buying 219, you're going to now buy it. I mean, to me, I like this fight card. I mean, I don't like it as much as say I like 217 or 218, but I do like the fight card. But to me, ultimately, my number one reason for watching this fight card is Khabib Nurmagomedov and Edson Barboza. And when you look at Khabib, and I know John Anik had the great stat about, you know, since his fight against Rafael Dos Anjos has fought, I believe the number is 10 times. And this is just back in 2014 when they fought. And Khabib has only fought, I believe it's twice since then. But, you know, I think, you know, I guess it's probably more, you're probably interested about Friday when Khabib steps on the scale. But I kind of feel like, you know, and look, a lot of this is Khabib's own doing with, you know, pulling out of fights due to injury. And of course, we all remember what happened back in March, which is a fight that we both love and wish we would have saw him in. And Tony locked it up there. But I kind of feel like this is a pay-per-view and on Friday with the weigh-ins and Saturday with the fight. For Khabib kind of to get that, I mean, maybe this is the wrong word to use here, Daniel, but kind of get the stink off him a little bit.
Yeah, I think for Khabib, you could only have so many headlines with so little action that you become irritating. And I think that's the problem with Colby Covington, even though he's been fighting. The problem for Colby is all his actions are just boring fights. But for Nurmagomedov, there have been so many headlines, so many matchups announced that at some point the lack of fights, and it's totally not in his control, right? Like, he's had just a sad, sad amount of luck when it comes to injuries. But it's fair to say that it's a stink surrounding him. And this fight represents an ability to get back in the groove of things, get back to doing what he does so well, which is fighting. And Khabib's a fighter who early on really established himself as a fighter with the talent level to climb up the ranks and be a real impact player at 155 pounds. And the reason why this fight is so exciting is this could be the step in that direction. And he has one hell of a test in Edson Barboza. Obviously, we all kind of know the breakdown of this fight. It's going to come down to the wrestling of Nurmagomedov. But the absolute mauling Barboza just did with the flying knee knockout, the win over Gilbert Melendez, Edson Barboza is just clicking on all cylinders. And while when you look in at this Nurmagomedov-Edson Barboza fight, it's clear who the A side is. It's Khabib Nurmagomedov. This is a fighter who, with the win, puts himself in place for a fight against Tony Ferguson, obviously. But Edson Barboza has been fighting. He has been looking good. And this is just a perfect opportunity for him to steal the spotlight for Nurmagomedov, because Nurmagomedov has had his own issues, his own troubles that he needs to get through. And in the meantime, while he has to get through that himself, he also has to face probably the best fighter he stepped a foot in cage with in Edson Barboza.
You know, I do wonder with Barboza, we know how much leg kicks are a part of his game. How much will he throw those legs kick knowing about the takedown? I mean, this ultimately comes down to if Khabib can get this fight to the ground, Khabib's going to win. And Khabib is my pick in this fight. I think it's hard not to pick Khabib just because of his abilities. But if Barboza can keep this fight on the feet, Barboza will win.
Yeah, I think for Barboza, the game plan has to be, first off, test the waters and see if you're able to keep it standing. You may not be able to. In all likelihood, he probably won't. And that's where you played a bit more conservative with your stand-up, creating distance and just moving the hell out of the way. If Nurmagomedov's able to take him down with ease, that's when it becomes do or die, I think, for Barboza's striking tactic, Jason. I think that's when he has to take risk and has to try and time Nurmagomedov's wrestling and counter the wrestling with strikes rather than defense, just because that probably presents the greatest opening he will have for Nurmagomedov, are that small moments where Nurmagomedov is looking to take the fight down to the ground. That could represent the best chance Barboza has to win, just a dynamic knockout. But prior to going towards that, he has to test the waters when it comes to his wrestling defense. You have to have that kind of confidence, even though Nurmagomedov very much is like a bear in there. And funny enough, he's had experience against bears, but for Nurmagomedov, it does seem inevitable when he matches up with anybody that he's going to bring you down. So Barboza may just have few moments in this fight where there is that opportunity to land that perfect strike. And without a doubt, Jason, this is number one for me when it comes to what I'm looking forward to for UFC 219. This is just a really compelling fight. Not one that may not be the fight of the night. I would assume it isn't, but one that's just interesting because of the skill levels of both guys involved and the questions surrounding Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, I mean, it, really, with Nurmagomedov, it all starts on Friday. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, are going to be tuning into his live streams, whether it's, you know, from, you know, MMA Junkie or MMA Fighting, and, you know, they're going to, you know, Well, no, does Khabib make weight? I mean, that's part of the story. I saw Tony had a tweet about Tony Ferguson having a tweet about it late last week. Maybe it was over the weekend, but that's part of the story. But to me, that is the reason that I am going to be tuning in. But of course, the main event, Chris Cyborg defending the UFC women's featherweight title against Holly Holm. Of course, it's a matchup that's been talked about for a long time. And, I want to first off start by talking about a question we got on social media. This came from Scott saying, what do you think Cyborg's pay-per-view drawing capacity can be? And this is, really, Daniel, it's a big question mark with Chris. You know, when you... You know, I think we naturally look at social media and social media impressions and the reactions that we get from a fighter's fans and helping kind of decide, how much of a draw they are. And Chris's fans, to me, are the second most passionate fans in all of MMA. Number one, clearly, is Conor McGregor. But I just don't know if she is that pay-per-view draw. It'd be very interesting. Typically I go out, me and my buddies will go out to a local, sports bar that we live by. And, look, Cormier Jones drew a crowd, but outside of that, there really hasn't been a pay-per-view that drew a crowd in. So I'm really interested to kind of see it. I mean, if this pay-per-view does over 300,000 buys, I think that's a win for the UFC.
Look, I hope it does. I really do. I don't like saying these things because if you're wrong, you're going to sound really stupid. But I tell you what, here's honest Daniel. Here is, stick my finger down my mouth. Well, just one finger and you stick it back out to hear the wind or whatever, the buzz. I think there's a chance that this pay-per-view does like Demetrius Johnson numbers. I think this one could do like 150,000 buys. I really don't get the sense that anyone's looking forward to this fight.
Daniel, I get the same sense. I don't know if it's because of, the holidays and so many people are traveling. That's a bigger,
yeah.
But I mean, look, it's Tuesday night, December 26th. When we're recording this, late afternoon, early evening. I don't get a lot of sense for optimism. I hope by the time we get to, like you said, by the time we get to Friday and Saturday, I hope the buzz is high and people are interested. But Chris Cyborg is, everyone knows that the issue she's had with the UFC over the years. If this pay-per-view doesn't do well for her, I mean, she loses a lot of leverage, even though she just did sign a new deal with the UFC. But I would hope that this pay-per-view can draw 350,000 buys, but I'm kind of like you. I think that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, I mean, again, the problem with recording this podcast so early in the week is you do get a better sense of late buzz. But just telling you what I think, like, first off, Holly Holm's going to be probably the best challenger Cyborg will have. Point blank. Maybe a bantamweight champion will fight Cyborg down the line, but think about how quickly the UFC got up women's flyweight rankings. And today there are no rankings available for the women's featherweight division. Mm-hmm. And this could be so bad that we may not have a UFC featherweight champion in 2019 when we ring in the year.
Let's be honest about it. We're doing one-off fights at 145.
Yeah, I mean, this is the Chris Cyborg division. Because Chris Cyborg is a name, she does matter. It's just that there are so few pay-per-view draws that when you do these one championship UFC pay-per-views, they're really hard to do without pay-per-view draws. And I can't even tell you how many more the UFC have. They have like two or three draws and you can just do one fight. You really got to stack pay-per-views with two championship fights. And to me, UFC 219, looking at it, Jason, it appears to be a hardcore MMA show where this will just tell you how many hardcore UFC fans there are. You mentioned the timing. That's incredibly important. People just spend a lot of money for the holidays. People are distracted by the holidays. When it's December 30th, you're a day away from New Year's Eve. I mean, you're going to spend a lot of money on New Year's Eve as well. So the timing is not great, but most importantly, there just isn't a fight that generates casual fan interest. Casual fans may know who Nurmagomedov is. They probably know who Carlos Condit is, but they probably aren't thinking about this fight card. I don't know what's going on with the promotion, but I get the sense there's a chance this could do the worst buy rate of the year. I don't think it will, but I do think it's going to be close to 150,000, 170,000. I just think it's going to tell you how many hardcore MMA fans there are, because going back in the hardcore MMA fan bubble, I will say the four current fights on the main card, I'm looking forward to each and every one. I just don't get the sense that this fight card matters to the casual fans.
Let me bring this question that we got that we got as we were recording this, where this person asked, if Khabib pulls out again, will they still charge $60 for a three-fight main card? Is there any precedent? Look, if for some reason Khabib does not make it to fight night, you're still paying $60 for his pay-per-view. I mean, don't kid yourself. The UFC is not going to reduce the price for the pay-per-view if something were to happen to the co-main event. But, I mean, we saw it back in March at whatever number that was. That was the rematch of Woodley and Thompson, where everyone was so much more interested in watching the Khabib Ferguson fight, and we saw how much that hurt it. But, you know, it'll be interesting is, since I do marketing for a sports bar that is on Clearwater Beach, Florida, and, you know, the Outback Bowl is here and a lot of people will be on the beach. I know the Michigan band is literally staying across the street from our bar. And so it'll be interesting to me to kind of find out after the fact of, you know, did we get a younger crowd in to come in to watch the fights, and were they asking for the fights or did they just want to drink? But, you know, that to me will be a little bit of an interesting, you know, sign. You know, I think that's one of the things that people talk about with MMA is, you know, that fan that was going out in 2005, 2006, all of a sudden now they're in their late 30s or their early 40s, you know, is there still that boom in that, you know, 18 to 24-year-old range? I mean, obviously you're in that range. You see it. And you know, and we're going to talk about our New Year's resolution in May in 2018. And one for me is just, I just hope we see big fights. You know, I think as we look back on 2017, there was really a lack of big fights.
Yeah, I guess we didn't have a single Conor fight, right?
No, I mean, you had a boxing. Yeah. Think about this, okay? You know, the end of the year card last year, which was on a Friday, not a Saturday because of New Year's Eve, was Amanda Nunes, Ronda Rousey. All the buzz in the world around that fight, obviously because of Ronda Rousey. You look at this pay-per-view, and as we're talking here on Tuesday, you don't get the sense of a lot of buzz. We hope there ends up being a lot of buzz by the time these fights, you know, take place on Saturday night. But, you know, it's just, you think about, you know, in MMA, the big fights, you know, you look at, you know, obviously Cormier and Jones, you know, back in, you know, late July, you know, that to me was the biggest MMA fight of the year. No question.
Yeah. Cormier Jones and then GSP Bisping would be the two biggest fights of the year. And then just moving forward, look, I think this UFC is going to get a really good start with UFC 220. I mean, the UFC 220 is going to be the litmus test for whether or not new ownership knows if things have changed when it comes to promotional skills with new ownership. If they can't promote UFC 220, they need to sell the promotion. But I mean, they're not going to, because they're about to sign a TV deal that's going to give them a big profit. But I mean, if they can't sell me Ngannou Miocic, I think that's just insane. I think the middleweight championship fight they got lined up with Whitaker Rockhold isn't a big fight, but maybe it could set up the next middleweight fight. It's a big fight. Looking at what else they could do, obviously Dillashaw Johnson represents an opportunity for a big fight. I know DJ's never been a draw, but I do think challengers make guys into stars, and Dillashaw is the type of challenger that could garner that interest. I think Conor McGregor is going to fight again in 2018. I think GSP is going to fight again in 2018. If they fight each other, you may waste a super fight. And then if you're the UFC, you got to look at what it takes to get a Diaz brother in the cage again. Mm-hmm. And also, you got to look into what interesting fight can we do with Daniel Cormier, because this may be the last year that you get him. And they already got the Volkan fight. So you have maybe one more fight or two more fights left with your light heavyweight champion. You got to see how to make him interesting. But the biggest thing the UFC needs to do in 2018, and this isn't a resolution I made, but I didn't write it down beforehand, but it's real simple. They got to make a female star, a legit female star. And I don't know who it is. It may be Rose Namajunas, and maybe Ioana Jędrzejczyk returning to win the title there or winning it at flyweight. But I'm talking about a draw on pay-per-view. And Chris Cyborg may, in fact, be the biggest star, the female star. But to answer that first question we had to answer both questions we had. One, I don't think Cyborg's that big of a pay-per-view draw. There's a reason why this is her first headliner. This is going to be her most compelling challenger in Holly Holm, probably. And number two, I think the UFC should maintain the same price just because if the Khabib fight were to get canceled or whatever, I think the same amount of people would buy this pay-per-view because this is just going to tell you again how many people are going to buy any show that has UFC on it.
Here's – and this just came to my mind. It makes me wonder, and obviously the UFC would never give this information out. I wonder how many people buy a pay-per-view on the day of the pay-per-view as opposed to pre-ordering it, say, on a Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday.
I would assume the vast, vast, vast majority do it that way. But I don't know.
I find if I am watching a pay-per-view at home and I know it's like a really big fight, I find myself at least ordering it like the morning of the fight. Because I hate to like sit there and, you know, it's 9:55. All right, let's turn over to the HD pay-per-view channel, and then there's some issue, and now you're on the phone trying to figure out how to order it. So I always try. I try at least order the morning of in case there is any issues.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, my purchasing habits has always been before the prelims start. That's when I do it, not the morning of. Okay. I'd usually do it beforehand. So those are our two experiences. I do wonder what the mass consumer is. But I do think for the most part, it's people buying it the same day, whether it be the morning, the minute after the prelims are over. I'm sure some people do that. But I got to think it's that way because people aren't setting their schedule around a UFC pay-per-view, you know, when you start the week out.
How many people will just buy it right when Dana White and Joe Rogan start yelling at them?
Yeah, Dana's really, really, really excited about Carlos Esparza. I got to buy this main card. Yeah, I wonder how many pay-per-views that verbal sparring session has sold. I mean, who knows? Maybe the biggest draw in the UFC is Joe Rogan with all his Joe Rogan cult fans.
I tell you, I've started listening to his he started an MMA only podcast. I really like it. He brings in I listened to the Justin Rin episode a couple days ago. That was really good.
I'm pretty confident Joe Rogan's gonna start a cult. I just got the feeling with all these podcasts, like all these people spend like 8 hours a day listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, like he's going to start a cult. I just get the sense, Jason. I may listen to his podcast. I used to listen to the Joe Rogan Experience, but not religiously. But man, some of you people are just religious. Like he's going to start a cult.
And it's tough to get through a 3 or 4 hour podcast.
Yeah, are you kidding me? I always listen to my podcast on 1.5 speed. It gets through the podcast a little quicker.
Yeah,
you do that.
No, I listen in real time.
That's a life hack. If you listen to an absurd amount of podcasts and you listen to it on the iPhone app or whatever podcast app, listen to it at 1.5 speed and you can just listen to more podcasts just because like a 60-minute podcast is cut down to 40 minutes. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. You know, obviously we talked a little about Jimmy Rivera a little earlier. And as we mentioned, recording this podcast, UFC has not officially come out and said that he's officially off the fight card, but that is all expectations. Of course, initially supposed to take on Dominic Cruz. Cruz gets injured, pulls out. Then it ends up being John Lineker, and then it was on, I believe it was Sunday, where John Lineker pulled out due to an injury. He did go on social media, apologized to it, you know, felt awful. And, you know, and there was the Marlon Moraes situation where, you know, both of those guys were going back and forth. And, you know, it just appears that no deal could happen. It looks like a little bit of weight issue. Makes you wonder maybe if Marlon Moraes, maybe he had some little leverage on it. But I think at the end of the day, it's you just feel bad for Marlon. And we got a question, feel bad for Jimmy. We got a question from Brandon asking for us to talk about Marlon Moraes calling out Jimmy Rivera to fight at UFC 219, but backs out when Jimmy accepts it. I mean, look, you know, we don't know exactly what the behind the scenes were going on there. I mean, look, Ultimately, there has to be a contract agreed upon between all parties involved, being the fighters and the UFC. And I feel bad for Jimmy Rivera. Obviously it sucks for him to be in this situation, but if I'm Jimmy Rivera, obviously Marlon Moraes would have been a nice fight to get, but if I'm him and his management, probably my eyes are either on TJ Dillashaw or Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah. You gotta be frustrated if you're Jimmy Rivera. I think, well, first off, he missed his Thanksgiving, his Christmas, his honeymoon. Firstly, I'm not going to blame the UFC for you missing your honeymoon or anything, because, I mean, you planned that out, right? Like, you planned it when you got married. So, but missing Thanksgiving, missing Christmas, and not getting a fight, and you're a fighter who has done such a phenomenal job of moving up the ranks, and really a fighter maybe with more of a name would have already gotten his title shot looking at what his resume is. I think it's got to be so frustrating. You got to market yourself to get a championship fight. I still don't think that's going to happen. I don't know who he's going to fight. He may just fight Marlon Moraes at a later date, because it appears as they don't like each other very much, and that would be a great fight. I think Marlon Moraes really fumbled this from a PR standpoint. I just don't grasp Marlon Moraes's how you can see this from Marlon Moraes's perspective and think that guy's cool. You know, like the video he uploaded where he's like, you're going to fight me on my terms. It's like, well, then why were you even talking? So overall, winners and losers. I mean, the biggest loser is probably Marlon Moraes, because he's kind of got egg on his face, because Jimmy Rivera appeared to really have moved the goalposts. And when it comes to the context of this fight, the weight and whatnot, that's probably, I mean, everyone's kind of a loser in the situation. I don't really know who the winner is, other than whoever was supposed to fight Jimmy Rivera, because he probably would have won, because he is quite good. But either I think Dillashaw or Garbrandt or just a big money fight for Rivera, which I don't know what that is. I just think for Jimmy, you can't take a step back with your next matchup, because he's got too much riding on the amount of momentum he has with what he's done so far.
Yeah, it's just, at the end of the day, you just feel bad for him. But, we'll see when he does ultimately get rebooked. You mentioned about Cynthia Carvillo and Carlos Esparza. It's a big matchup at 115 pounds. It's a type of fight that I feel there would be people in the UFC that are hoping Cynthia Carvillo wins. Do you think I'm wrong?
No. At 6-0, a fighter that's been given the Ronda Rousey seal, where it's like, oh, she's the next Ronda Rousey. There will be so many of those female fighters over the years. Every 2 years we'll probably get another one. But yeah, she's got that seal, and for good reason. She's an incredibly exciting fighter. Watching her fight to fight, she has great development in her skills. She's got a great, fierce personality, a really intense fighter when she's in the cage. I get the sense that Cynthia Carvillo is a fighter that the UFC, best case scenario, maintains her undefeated record and vaults up and eventually challenges for a title. That's what I think the UFC hopes they'll get out of Cynthia Carvillo. And I think she will get a win here, Jason, against Carla Esparza. I mean, Carla Esparza, again, when you think of strawweight fighters, she comes to mind as someone who is the veteran label. She's been fighting for, 7 years or so professionally. She's a really solid wrestler. She's been a name. She was an integral part of the early days of Invicta. Obviously, she's fought in Bellator. And Carla Esparza, I think, is going to have a chance to really control where this plays out positionally. But no matter where this plays out, I think the hyperactivity of Cynthia Carvillo and the raw skills that she does possess is going to be enough for her to win a split decision, unanimous decision, a really close fight that I think Cynthia Carvillo will win. Now, if she comes out and aces the exam, I think there's a real possibility that she just comes out and runs through Carla Esparza, but that's not what I would pick.
Yeah, it'd be interesting matchup there at 115 pounds. Mentioned about Carlos Conner and Neil Magny. I mean, what do we see out of Carlos Conner? I mean, I think that's really the question mark. I mentioned about that interview I was watching on MMAfighting.com that he did. I mean, and this is the first time we've seen him since August of 2016, a loss against Damian Maia. He's lost back-to-back fights. His last win, May 30th, 2015, against Thiago Alves, 1-3. In his last four fights. And, when you look on the other side of this fight with Neil Magny, of course, a veteran of the UFC entering this fight following a submission loss back in September against Rafael Dos Anjos. He is 1-2 in his last three fights. I want to pick Carlos Condit. I really do, but man, why do I think that Magny's going to pull this one off?
Well, you've seen him fight lately. I mean, Neil is a really, really tough entry back in the UFC. Whoever it was, Condit was going to get it because he's got name value. He's exhibited high level. It has been a while since he's just been in a cage and got his hand raised, and I understand the trepidation. My initial outlook on this fight was I'm thinking to pick Neil Magny, but the more and more I look into this one, the more and more I just feel sucked into picking Carlos Condit here. Because if he does come out here, look really good and get the victory, you're going to feel dumb for not picking a fighter who, at his most recent prime, appeared to be really close when it comes to claiming a welterweight championship. Mm-hmm. And if he returns to that, I think that's going to be way too much for Neil Magny. Neil Magny is the sure thing. You kind of get a sense that he's going to be consistent with what you've seen lately out of him. And what you've seen lately out of him is a welterweight who's, you know, 8th through 12th ranked fighter in the division. But I'm gonna keep it fun and pick Carlos Condit here.
In terms of the preliminary card, the fights, and we've kind of talked about some of these fights. I am the Tim Elliott Mark De La Rosa fight is interesting. De La Rosa coming in here on short notice, undefeated at 9-0 in his career. His last win came back in June at Combates 15. His last two wins have come by submission. 5 of his 9 wins are by submission. It's an intriguing fight, and I just don't think Tim Elliott can have a boring fight. So if that ends up being the only fight on UFC Fight Pass, I'm tuning in to watch that one.
Same here, man. You talk about a tough test at flyweight. Tim Elliott would be the answer to that question. I mean, Mark De La Rosa is undefeated, very young. Every time you have a fighter with that kind of makeup, there's always high upside with what could take place, and obviously there's a likelihood that the UFC vet takes him out. That's why I think Elliott De La Rosa is the fight I'm looking forward to the most on the prelims. It could be entertaining, but it's also really interesting because I do think Tim Elliott, you know, moving forward at 135, is someone who has like really high variance of his performance level. There are times where he just appears to be like this savant in the cage where he can scrap with anybody, and he almost accommodates himself to who his opponent is, and his fights are usually always close. So I think De La Rosa Elliott's a really interesting fight. That's probably the one I would say is the one I'm looking forward to the most, even more than Jiri Glenn and Diakis Hooker. But Hooker Diakis could very well be the fight of the night, and I'm just really sad that Gokhan Saki pulled out, because to me that Saki Roundtree fight would have been just a phenomenal matchup to watch take place.
And of course, we always like to look at the betting odds here in terms of underdogs, and you know, some numbers that I would tell you that kind of surprised me. And let me get your thoughts on this. Let's just start off with Mark De La Rosa, only plus 180.
I think that tells you this is, he's really good. I think that's what that tells you.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, outside looking in, you would think that number would be a little higher. You know, you look at Lewis Smolka, plus 250. I think there's some value there against Matthias Nicolai. Rick Glenn, plus 200. I tell you, I think that's got some good value there. Neil Magny, plus 145. We just kind of just talked about that. You know, Carla Sparza plus 215. If she can use her wrestling and you know, keep that fight on the ground, Barboza plus 240, Holly Holm plus 325. I think there's some, if you're looking to make some underdog plays on Saturday night, I think there's some good value across the board.
Yeah, man. Holly Holm at plus 325 is what I really gravitate towards, just because I feel like that fight is a lot closer than that for sure. I mean, Cyborg is my pick, obviously, just because it's hard to pick against Chris Cyborg at 145. I mean, Holly Holm's only had her hand raised like one time since like 2015. So still though, you do think that what Cyborg does really well is bully people with their stand up. And obviously Holly Holm has the skill set to prepare a really solid game plan to combat Cyborg, and a chance to win the fight either by finish or by decision. And to look at this fight and then look at the odds at Holly Holm at plus 325, that's where I see the most value. As far as which underdog I would pick, he's not a major underdog, but at plus 155, Dan Hooker, I would look at him as a fighter that I would like there. And then you mentioned Smolka at plus 250, taking on Nicolau, a guy who hasn't been in the cage in a while. Once again, every time you have a fighter who hasn't fought in a while, you always kind of got to look at his opponent as potentially maybe this guy's lost a step. And that's when you pick the underdog if that's not him.
And it's interesting with Lewis Smolka, just looking at the history of this, was at plus 120. And then about Christmas Eve, just jumped up to plus 250. So obviously someone really liked Nicolai in that matchup. But I'm looking forward to watching UFC 219. We will recap the card next week. But the other thing that we wanted to
are you picking Cyborg or Hull?
I'm going Cyborg.
Okay.
I think that, I guess a part of my reason why I just don't have a lot of faith in Holly Holm is, man, I remember that Beth Cohea fight. She did not look great in that fight.
That's true. That's kind of the thing about Holly Holm's entire career in the UFC, is there are moments where she showcases, like, great ability, and there are moments where her fights are boring or she's not looking hot. And hot in the sense of, like, skill set, being active, in performing to her resume. I get that sense. And I mean, are you digressing from any of these picks? Are you not picking Cyborg? Are you not picking Nurmagomedov? Are you not picking Calvillo? Are you not picking Condit?
I don't see myself going the other way at any of those fights.
Yeah, same here. Those are my picks as well on the main card.
Yeah, I just can't see myself. But, the other thing, and I'll put my official UFC 219 picks out on Saturday. I'll put those out about, 6 o'clock or so on Saturday for my official picks. But the other thing we wanted to talk about here on the podcast was, obviously, calendar end is coming here. Of course, January 1st, coming up on Monday of next week. So, obviously everyone talks about their New Year's resolutions, which means I'm going to start going to, my gym coming up next week. It'll be absolutely loaded with people for about 2 weeks, and then it'll kind of go back to normal. But we want to talk about our New Year's resolutions for MMA in 2018, and these are things that we'd like to see happen in 2018. I mentioned earlier more big fights. Another one that I want to see, and this is more for outside of the UFC, is I hope we find out that there's more drug testing going on in MMA. If you notice on the MMAreport.com last week, I did report a story about Pedro Gonzalez, who won the CES MMA interim featherweight title last year with a win over Saul Almeida, and ended up getting a tip to that in the MMA registry that fight was turned to a no contest, and then did reach out to the Rhode Island Commission about that, and they did confirm that it was a violation of their drug program. But my understanding was not a long suspension. So you can kind of figure out, obviously not steroids. So something else that he tested positive for. And I just hope we have more drug testing outside the UFC. Obviously there is a ton of drug testing that goes on in the UFC with USADA, but I hope we start to hear more about whether it's Bellator or, any promotion on the regional scene. Like, I know here in my home state of Florida, the only time drug testing is required for a show is if it's a title fight. Then they'll do a urine test. And, obviously that'll test for, your performance enhancing drugs that can pop up in a urine test. But I just hope that we hear and see more drug testing outside the UFC. And in related to that note, and I know that this is highly unlikely it'll ever happen, I would love it if the UFC would set aside X amount of money for fighters a year to where they come to Las Vegas or they can go to Salt Lake City at the WADA lab, hand them their bottle of supplements, and they will test those supplements right there, and they can tell them if there's anything banned in those substances, so we can kind of get away from the whole tainted supplement defense.
Yeah, we have seen that defense time and again, and I would like to see that. That's a good resolution for sure. You never like to hear about regional people getting popped for failing a drug test, but the positive side is that's actually happening. That means that the drug test is working. So that is good to hear, and hopefully that extends. You mentioned about UFC setting aside money for fighters. That's one of my resolutions. Pay UFC fighters more money. Look, man, they're going to agree to a television contract fairly soon. It's probably going to be like $225 million, something like that. When you start to think about the revenue that the UFC generates, You combine that with all the other crap they make. I don't know what their revenue is yearly, but you begin to look at what the money the UFC fighters make. I don't know what the numbers are. I am too stupid to have this conversation. I just think it's like probably like 20% or way less of the revenue. It goes to the UFC fighters.
That's the number people throw around.
Dude, it should be 45 to 55 or 50 to 50. Like, that should be the ratio. There should not be a single UFC fighter under contract ever again doing a GoFundMe. Every UFC fighter should have a six-figure yearly contract, I think. I could be wrong. But I think the profit margin for the UFC at the very top is too high. It just doesn't make any sense. Again, just like stupid math here. Like, let's say the contract's $225 million. Divide that in half, and then divide that by like 1,000. Let's say there's like 1,000 UFC fighters under contract. There's probably less than that, though. That's like $112,000 per fighter, something like that. Anyways, moral of the story: UFC fighters should get paid more money. Wow, that's my resolution. I understand the only way that happens is if a fighter like Conor McGregor actually has compassion for other people and utilizes their leverage to help the lowest rung fighters. Because while the very top fighters in the promotion are paid handsomely well, the bottom 60% are absolutely screwed. And in a sport as brutal as mixed martial arts, it's actually gross.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Would love to see that. Another one that I have is more about the media, and this is even a challenge to myself to do this, is to find out more stories about a fighter's life outside of MMA. You know, I was going back and listening to the interview that I had with Brandon Gertz last week on the podcast. If you missed that, it's up on themmareport.com. Where he talked about how Bellator 190, where he got the win there, was the first time that his father was one of his cornermen, you know, was fighting over in Italy. And it's one of those things of, I went back in the interview and said, man, I really should ask more about, you know, his relationship with his father and fighting and, you know, what was his father's thoughts about when he started fighting, whatnot. So I think it's kind of a challenge to myself and other MMA reporters to really find out more details about fighters, try to sell their stories a little bit. I mean, obviously, we're always going to ask, hey, you know, assess your opponent, but, you know, try to find out who that fighter is outside of it, because, you know, there's a lot of news stories that get written about guys who are on a main car, but I think as journalists, we can do a better job of, you know, learning those stories of those guys that are, you know, on the lower end of a UFC card and, or, you know, on a Bellator prelim or on an LFA card or any regional show across the country to try to help sell these guys' stories to help them, you know, because look, our job is not to be the PR department of a promotion, but it is in our best interest to try to sell these stories because the more MMA grows, the more jobs are going to be out there for us.
Yeah, man, that's a great idea. I think someone really needs to talk to Eric Anders and ask him if he's ever played college football before. That would be an interesting story. I would love to see that one. Here's a resolution for me. Pretty simple. We'll go Bellator here. Pretty simple, Jason. I'll let you do it for me. What do you think my resolution is for Bellator?
Resolution for Bellator. Ooh.
Pretty easy.
What is it?
No more tape delay shows.
Oh, just, God.
That's
yes.
It. That's it. Oh, that's like
why did I not write that one down?
Yeah, man. No more tape delay shows from Bellator. Everyone's got a bad habit, a bad addiction. And Bellator's bad habit is these gosh darn tape delay shows. I understand why they want to pursue the international market. I understand they do well in these markets when it comes to the live events. Just run them live, Jason.
Yeah, you would think that, I mean, even if you put them on an iPay-per-view, you know, I mean, it's just, I think that's one of the interesting things about Bellator heading into 2018 is being on the Paramount Network. How will that succeed?
Yeah, I think the ratings overall on the Paramount Network will probably go down, but Bellator's will go up because they're going to offer really good cards to start off.
That's got to be an interesting debate is, you know, can a MMA promotion succeed on a non-sports channel?
I think so, because the WWE succeeds on the USA Network. And I think that's the parallel.
See that now, when you talk about the UFC TV deal, I think what hurts them is the fact that the WWE rights are up in, is it 2019?
Yeah, I think the WWE rights are going to get more than the UFC rights. I mean, WWE rights have way more content. And here's another thing is Ari Emanuel, I believe. I don't know the facts here either. This is just like scuttle. I'm not super sure. But I believe Ari Emanuel has a hand in pursuing the TV deal for the WWE. Like, I think the WWE works with WME.
Here's the thing. If you are FS1, would you rather have the WWE or the UFC?
WWE. I mean, WWE draws ratings. The ad rates for WWE is way less than the UFC. But WWE has more content. And you're going to get just – think about it. WWE produces a three-hour Monday show, a two-hour show on Tuesday – and they have the ability to produce more content for you. I mean, you're talking about 5 hours every week with, 2 million viewers per show, 1.7. You know, I would rather want that. And I would try my best to sell those ad rates at a higher rate. I don't know what's going on there. I believe the study is that just more poor people watch WWE than UFC. But as someone who loves both, I would pursue WWE rights. But I do think the WWE deal is going to be more, but I mean, a bigger part of that is the WWE is going to produce just more live content than the UFC will, because they have the advantage of doing 5 hours every week.
In terms of my final resolution here for MMA in 2018, let's fix the weight cutting issue.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
Let's have more guys just fighting at their natural weight. I mean, you start to look at the poster fighters for not cutting massive amounts of weight. Rafael Dos Anjos has to be that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Look at how amazing. Look at what a year has done to Rafael Dos Anjos. Look at where he is today versus where he was a year ago. Yeah. And he's fighting at welterweight. I love it. Fix weight cutting. That is one of mine. But Jason, I guarantee you, when we do a New Year's resolution a year from now, weight cutting will be on there. We do it in 2019, weight cutting will be on there. I just think that, along with judging, is going to be an issue for time and again. Again, weight cutting, what's going to be the thing that causes a big shift? We both know it. Someone has to die. It's really weird that we're like super – I am super sociopathic about it, but it's so obvious that that is the only thing that will cause dramatic change. Because everything else has been half measures, and I can't really tell you what I think is the best course of action, but I'm telling you it's not working now, and it's gonna have to, something crazy has to happen, something sad and tragic, and I hope to God that doesn't happen, Jason. I pray, but yeah, it's unfortunate, but they need to fix it.
Yeah, we've talked about that, especially when it comes to the UFC. You feel like something tragic is gonna have to happen before we ultimately see change, and that's sad. It's really sad.
So I got three more resolutions. I'll just run through them.
All right.
Simple. Commit to two announcers if you're the UFC. I don't care which two. I just think three announcers is too many for a broadcast.
I think, and this is just my experience in being in broadcasting and play-by-play for the last 15 years, if you're going to do that, it needs to be the same crew every time.
Yeah, they need to have a chemistry with one another, because UFC is a sport where the play-by-play guy is going to talk a lot because there is always something happening.
I feel 3 years from now, Johnny Ack, Daniel Cormier is your number. It will essentially be the guys calling a majority of the fights.
The odd man out is Joe Rogan, because the problem is he knows more about calling a fight than most play by play guys. Not that he's a better play by play guy, but since he's not a UFC fighter, and it seems like sometimes he takes over the duties for the play-by-play guy.
And he's mentioned the fact of, you know, at some point not doing this anymore. I mean, it feels like he's kind of, you know, and if Dana was not a part of the picture, I think Joe is definitely out of the picture there. I mean, I think they've got, and we talked about, I think last week, I mean, they've got some really good color analysts in there. But, you know, the problem is when you have that three-man booth, if you're not constantly working together, it ultimately leads to a lot of talking over each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think that – yeah, exactly. I think Cormier and Cruz have chemistry with one another, so they could probably do it with a play-by-play guy. I just think keep it safe, go with the two guys. I mean, to me, if I was going to do a commentary booth, my A-team, looking at what we've seen so far, would be John Anik and Paul Felder. That's what I would go with. I know Paul Felder's only done like two shows, but he shows more upside than Dom Cruz. But you can't go wrong with Cruz or Cormier. Just do two. Here's another one. Stop being Conor McGregor. The next Conor McGregor is not going to be like Conor McGregor. Yeah. There is always a thread in between these super duper stars that is similar. The thread is usually they're really good at fighting. That's about it. The brash attitude, being an asshole, that's not going to be the next superstar. Colby Covington is not going to be a pay-per-view draw. He just comes across. And at first, I was giving him credit, but the more I think about it, the more I think, oh, this guy's just kind of an asshole. And that is just, you know, not something – I mean, you don't want to be like Conor McGregor, because look at Conor right now. He's living a destructive life. But what I'm essentially telling everyone is I believe that the next super draw is going to be unique from Conor McGregor. I don't know what his temperament, personality, or her skill level will be. I just think what we've seen is – the people that we gravitate towards being these, you know, million-dollar buy rate draws are usually different from one another. There are differences between Brock Lesnar and Jon Jones and Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey and who else am I? Chael Sonnen, I guess, but not really. Anderson Silva and GSP and BJ Penn. So there's differences. Stop being like Conor. You're just going to come across like a total asshole. And lastly, Jason, my New Year's resolution, this is a big one. It's simple. Chillax with the championships. No more interim championships the entire year. There should not be a single interim championship. If you do not defend the title, you vacate it. That's it. No interim championships. Chillax the championships. Dissolve the featherweight championship and the women's featherweight championship, and don't add another one.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier with Daniel Cormier and, you know, kind of – you know, what's going to happen after UFC 220? I don't think there's many people outside of the Volkan Ozdemir camp that give him much of a shot in that fight. I mean, look, he's got a puncher's chance, but I expect Cormier. If you're the UFC, you have to be hoping and praying, because you look at the light heavyweight division right now, and yeah, you could go Gustafsson, but it's almost you got to think that Dana White and the upper management of the UFC is just hoping John Jones gets off on a technicality in February.
Yeah, I think that's what you're hoping too. And I mean, tell me, what's the process? Okay, what could happen there?
Well, he the California State Athletic Commission does hold jurisdiction on that, because that was a in competition drug test. So the hearing right now is scheduled to take place in February. I want to say the middle of February is when it's going to go take. I mean, look, the odds of Jones somehow getting off a technicality, I think, are like 5% or less. But I mean, if you're the UFC, that has got to be like a Christmas gift come in February. If somehow John Jones gets off on technicality and there's no suspension, I just think it's highly unlikely that happens.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely too. But if it does, that is a Christmas gift. And the resolution for John Jones, then just don't get suspended. We know we didn't talk about this before the show, but I was just thinking about this, Jason.
All right.
Let me do this. Okay. We're about to close out the year. How many fighters – I'll just go champion one by one by one. You just tell me yes or no. Which champion do you think will still be a UFC champion as we close out 2018?
All right, go ahead.
Demetrius Johnson,
yes.
Flyweight champion.
Yes.
Okay, I disagree. I think he will be the bantamweight champion, and I think we will have a vacant flyweight title. But I could be wrong. So bantamweight champion, TJ Dillashaw.
No.
Yeah. Do you have a prediction who that could be?
I say Dominic Cruz.
Ooh, good one. So I say DJ is the bantamweight champion, and my flyweight champion is finally Joseph Benavidez. Featherweight champion, Max Holloway.
Yes.
I agree with you. I do. Could be Josh Emmett. He could be, taking it for granted.
Yeah.
He could be taken for granted.
I saw Rolling Stone named Max Holloway our fighter of the year, and I totally agree with that.
Wow, they actually, yeah, the Rolling Stone named The Miz the wrestler of the year, so they really actually nailed the fighter of the year. That was a good pick. Ooh, lightweight champion, Conor McGregor.
Hell, does he actually defend the title? That's got to be the question mark. Does he ever defend the title?
Yeah.
So you're saying will he be the lightweight champion, you know, end of 2018, correct?
Yeah. January 1st, 2019, who are the champions?
I will say no on Conor. I will say it's Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Good pick. I'm going to go with Tony Ferguson, but it could be none of the three. I don't think it's going to be Conor. Welterweight champion, Tyron Woodley.
Yes.
I think the welterweight champion is going to be GSP. That's my pick. Middleweight.
Oh, I do not like that fight for GSP.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the less I feel good about it. But regardless, maybe it's Yancey Medeiros who just got a big fight against Cerrone. Probably not. Whitaker at middleweight.
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Man, I don't know if I'm going to pick him over Luke Rockhold, so I'll say no.
Good pick. I don't think so either. I think it's going to be Paulo Costa. That's my pick. It's probably a bad pick, but you got to go bold in one of these, you know? You never know. Ooh, light heavyweight champion Daniel Cormier. You look at the list of challengers, and they are depressing.
God, man. The only part where I say would be no is that he vacates the title and moves up the heavyweight, but I'll say yeah, he's still the champion.
I think Gustafsson will be the champion, but other than that, I have no confidence in anybody else.
And speaking of Volkan Ozdemir, story on MMAfighting.com posted here on Tuesday evening, say the state's moving forward on felony case against Volkan Ozdemir. Arraignment is set.
Jesus Christ.
Which I still go back on this, and we talked about that. If they wait a couple months to file charges, they have to think that they have a good case against him.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not a good look for the UFC. And
his arraignment date is 11 days before UFC 220. Oh, you know a hit piece is coming. You know one's coming.
You know they're feeding it to somebody. Some people in the office. Yeah, wow. Yeah, so definitely not Volkan Ozdemir. Heavyweight champion Stipe Miocic.
I say no just because of the history of the UFC heavyweight title. Even though he's on the, you know, he's done things no other champion's done, I would still say no. I think he retains the title at UFC 220. I still know if he ends the year as champion.
It's really hard at heavyweight, and I agree with you. But I think Francis wins the title. But I don't know who the champion will be. Maybe Junior Albini. Women's strawweight, Rose Namajunas.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. Women's flyweight, Nico Montano.
No.
Yeah. Who has a champion? Ioana?
Shevchenko? Man. They would be my top two picks. I mean, you would think that Shevchenko would get a chance to be the champion before Ioana?
Yep,
that'd be my guess. So I'd probably go with Shevchenko.
Me too. And then women's featherweight, is that still a division?
As long as Chris Cyborg's still fighting in the UFC, yes.
And then women's bantamweight, Amanda Nunes.
I would say yes.
Same here. Are there any more divisions added to the UFC?
No. I mean, obviously they could, you know, eventually adopt the new unified weight classes, but I don't see that happening.
So those are our, oh, here's the last one. Is Dana White still with the UFC to close out the year?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you ask me, is he still part of the UFC January 1, 2020? Probably say no.
Yeah, the 2 years is a long one, but I just feel like he'll be here for a year.
I think his days are numbered. I just, you know, part of me goes, financially, does he want to deal with it? I mean, obviously the guy made a ton of money. I think he still has a lot of passion for the sport. But I could see at some point there being a parting ways.
I mean, who has held a similar job since 2001? Like who can you point to that said they've had this same job for the last 16 years?
Well, I mean, let's just look at sports commissioners, because that's the way you have to look at them. I mean, MLB, Rob Manfred was what? Last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, you see, like, retire like 4 or 5 years
ago.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I can't think of the NBA's commissioner off the top of my head.
I mean,
Adam Silver, he took over a couple years ago. I mean, NHL.
That guy's been in there for a while. Gary
Bettman's still there.
Yeah, Gary Bettman's still there. I don't know what year he took over.
And then Goodell.
Whoa, he took over in 1993. Wow.
Yeah, and Roger Goodell was what, early 2000s, I want to say?
2006.
And he just got the contract extension. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those jobs. I mean, he's been doing a long time. I mean, obviously, you know, the fight business is a little bit of a different business. But I just, you know, you asked me 2020, do I think he's there? Probably no.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Beginning of 2019, I would probably say yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what will be the impetus. Honestly, I think it's going to be probably some weird blow up between him and UFC owner, something like that. Something emotional. But yeah. So those are our predictions for 2018 as well.
Yeah, so the calendar does turn over here under a week from now. It seems like this year has flown by, Daniel. But you know, kind of. I mean, you know, I know Dana White has talked about how it's been a great year for the UFC. I think that the reason it's been a great year is because the amount of money they made on the Conor Floyd fight. You know, but I just hope we see bigger fights in 2018. Obviously, the month January 20th is a day that I can't wait for personally. You're gonna have to have a couple of TVs set up here to watch all those fights that are taking place. But hopefully, we have some bigger fights.
Yeah, man, that to me is the big resolution. This was a down year for UFC. I mean, a down year when it comes to what the expectation was. I think one of the biggest sports stories of the year did include a UFC fighter in Conor McGregor. We did experience that high, but for the UFC, they need a better year. And it's probably going to start off well with whatever their TV deal is, just because sports TV rights are continuing to escalate. Maybe not as high as they once were, but I think they'll get a good deal to start things off.
But, of course, I do appreciate Daniel coming on. But right now, we're going to get into the interview portion of the show. We've got two interviews for you. First up, you're going to hear from Kyle Bochniak, who's returning at UFC 220. Talked to him a couple weeks ago. So you hear that first. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Henry Corrales, who fights on the same night Kyle fights, but he'll be fighting at Bellator 192 against Georgia Karahayan. Had a great opportunity to chat with both those guys. You're going to hear those interviews. And after that, I'm going to come back and wrap up this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. But first up, here's my interview with Kyle Bochniak. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that sets back inside the UFC Octagon, UFC 220, coming Saturday night, January 20th in Boston, is Kyle Bochniak. Kyle, as always, I appreciate the time. Obviously, this is the second time you get to fight in the Octagon in Boston. How is it different this time around as opposed to the first time, which obviously was your debut?
Yeah, well, the debut was on such short notice, 4 days' notice. Didn't really have any time to game plan or no time for jitters or anything like that. Just go in there, let it fly and have fun and hope for the best. Made it to my goal and it was a dream come true. But now, you know, I got a lot of experience in the Octagon now in the UFC. Got a full camp coming in here, training with a couple of killers in the Northeast, Rob Font, Cavalcator. Just really excited to go in there and put on a good show.
And of course, you're all, you know, fighting, you know, right that night. I mean, you know, obviously there's a ton of advantages of training with guys who are all trying to peak at the same time. But for you, what do you think is the biggest advantage to be training with guys who are also fighting on the same night?
It's huge push for all of us. Every day is a push. We're all, our cardio, everything is all pushing at the same level. Every day just gets more intense, more grueling. We're helping each other out. So, you know, We're all going to be peaking together. We're all going to be pushing each other. So it's on UFC 220 is going to be, it's going to be good.
Obviously entering in off that loss back in July, what's your biggest takeaway from that fight?
Just not controlling the range, being too aggressive, not taking my time, not picking my shots, too focused, nothing like creative. So, you know, and that wasn't the real me. I don't know what happened. Too much tunnel vision. Like I said, just coming out of the gate, throwing a lead hook, just stuff I don't do in the gym. I don't know what happened. But, you know, I went back to the drawing board. I learned a lot from it, working on my takedown defense, working a lot of good footwork, a lot of angles, and just excited to show what I've been working on.
You know, and it's been some time, you know, July. Was it one of those things just because of, you know, how the fight went and how you were, you just did not do what you wanted to accomplish, that you wanted to take a little extra time to just kind of maybe just evaluate yourself as opposed to trying to evaluate yourself and a future opponent at the same time?
Yeah, after that loss, you know, I had a really face the fact that I'm going to be fighting for my job my next fight. So, you know, nothing to take away from Kenny. He was his top level grappler. He did what he had to do. He didn't let me up my feet so I can stand and bang. He did what he had to do to get the win. you know, I need to work on getting back to my feet in that fight, which, you know, I have been working on that a lot. I got to take a look at myself as a fighter of what are my strengths are, what are my weaknesses are. Stop working so much on the weaknesses, stop working on my strengths and everything. And just be creative. Stop getting a tunnel vision. Stop trying to take the fight into one place. Just let things happen. You know what I mean? Stop thinking so much and just let things go.
If thinking too much, I've heard a lot of fighters talk about that. You know, sometimes, you know, they'll talk about the negative aspects of that. How do you get that out of your mindset of when you're in there on fight night to not think too much?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that's the experience that everyone talks about, having octagon experience or cage experience. You know, fighting local shows and stuff like that, you're finishing people, you're climbing the top real quick. But when you start fighting the top level guys around the world, like, all that stuff, it plays a factor of the cage experience, letting things just go, not overthinking things, like analysis by paralysis. Like, you start thinking so much about something that you just become stuck in the mud, where you just move, and just let things go, let things work. You're going to be more light in your feet, take it down, like stuffing takedowns, landing that right, whatever, you going for a takedown, things just start flowing. And if you start just looking for that one thing you've been working on full camp because you watched some video of him before and he doesn't do it, and now you're stuck. Mm-hmm. So that's where the experience comes from, when you can recognize something and go to something different.
Is it as simple as just saying, like, you just need to go in there and read and react? I mean, is it that simple?
I think it really is that simple. Just obviously you got to put all the work in during the camp. You look at what his strengths are, how he's defeated his opponents, what his weaknesses are, what his opponents have done good to him, and you game plan for that stuff. But you don't want to think about too much of it. And when the fight comes, if he's not doing anything that look that everybody's been giving you full camp, your training partners, if he comes out and he's not doing that, then you're going to have to flip the script and just do something completely different. You know, if you have one road to go home and that road is blocked, how are you going to get home? You got to figure out different avenues, different routes. So it's same thing in the fight game.
And taking on Brandon here, of course, the introduction to him was on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, which I think has got to be great for you when you're taking on a guy on a debut that you know you have high def footage of his fight. But assess him as an opponent. What sticks out to you about him?
Super aggressive, likes to stand and bang. You know, he's aggressive. I think we both have a similar style, so I think it's going to match up well. It's definitely going to be a crowd pleasing style we both have. It's going to be a good fight. I think a lot of the fans are going to be on their feet cheering. So, you know, he's a game opponent, and I'm excited to get in there and put on a show with him.
You mentioned you know your job's on the line here. Is that good pressure to have on yourself of knowing that, you know, look, you know what's on the line here?
Yeah. I mean, I thrive under pressure. You know, I'm fighting for my job. I'm working hard as I can, you know, training 3-4 hours a day, 6 days a week, eating right, and just visualizing getting that W and getting another UFC contract. It means everything to me, especially to do in my backyard at Boston, where everyone's going to be cheering for me and fighting a kid who's going to want to stand. It's really exciting.
I mean, would you just say that stylistically this is a perfect fight for you?
I think it's a perfect fight for me, yes. We both want to go, come forward, throw hands. And, you know, I'm going to be able to show my athleticism, my quickness, my explosiveness, and my cardio. So I think it's going to be a good matchup.
You mentioned about, you know, fighting in Boston. What is the, you know, what's the pros and cons of fighting in Boston for yourself?
Obviously, the pressure of everybody, you know, just going there, rooting for you. Everybody thinks you have the W already. Just stop thinking about all that and just go in there and just perform and just do me, man. Train hard and just go in there and put on a show and not think about anything. Just me in there, and I'm just going to get that W.
You mentioned about visualizing how this fight goes down. I mean, does the same type of scenario keep playing out, or is it one of those things of it's played out so many different ways?
I don't know what's going on. I'm not thinking a lot. Like, I'm just training hard. I haven't even really watched film on this kid a little bit. I let my coaches do all that. I'm just going to the gym right now. Like I said before, all my last fights, when I start visualizing things so much and then start game planning for something so specific, my last track record, I've been looking for these things in a fight. And if it doesn't happen, then I'm all thrown off and I look like I'm stuck in the mud. So I've kind of just been going to the gym. My coaches tell me what I'm doing. I just go and do it. So, like, I haven't been really visualizing anything. I'm just going to go in there and just be free and just fight like I used to fight. So stop wrecking people. Stop finishing things. Like, just be myself.
And, of course, the last time we had you on, you talked about the shirts that people could buy. And you know, you noted that, hey, you know, the qualities were getting pretty limited. So do all your fans are going to come out in Boston? Is there a wide range of shirts now available?
Yeah, I think we're going to start making some shirts for everyone to get and represent at the Garden. So I'll have those posted up soon on social media and give you a shout out. People can get them.
Of course, I got to imagine, you know, fighting at the Garden is kind of like a bucket list item for you. Is there another venue somewhere in the world that would be a bucket list item to fight in?
Madison Square Garden is probably the only other one. Just so many great fights have gone down there in New York City. But I'm excited to fight the TD Garden right now in Boston so much. I just can't wait. 6 weeks away. I've been putting in the work. I still got so much time. I just can't wait, man.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this coming here Saturday, January 20th, UFC 220. Kyle, as always, I appreciate time. And let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Instagram, at Kyle Bochniak, UFC, and on Twitter, at Kyle Bochniak, UFC. Posting everything, all my training, everything. So give me a follow.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that's going to be fighting in maybe a bucket list venue for him, just, not very close to where he grew up, Henry Corrales, of course, Bellator 192 against Georgie Karahanyan. Henry, as always, I appreciate time. Was the Forum a bucket list venue for you?
Thanks for having me, dude. Yeah, it's going to be my second time fighting here. I fought here last year on actually the same day, January 20th, so... We had a good time, so it's going to be cool to get up in there and have some more fun.
And, of course, 2-0 since having full fight camps in Bellator, another full fight camp. The victory against Noah Lahat, would you call that one of the best performances of your career?
No, I don't think so. I think I could have put him away if I really put it on him a little bit more. But kind of played it safe. I knew I was winning. But... So it got me here to this fight. So
I noticed after a fight, you put an Instagram post where it was you sitting on the stool and you're looking straight ahead and you wrote focused, but not listening. My apology, Eddie Cha. I'll get us a finish next time. Was that something Eddie had kind of pointed to you after the fight, or was that something that you really kind of realized maybe during the fight or right after the fight that just you weren't listening to your corner enough?
Yeah, I just wasn't, like I mentioned earlier, I kind of was playing it safe and just not really sticking to the game plan. And the output that I trained for and what I'm capable of just wasn't there. So, I just felt really bad for my coach because he puts in a lot of work with me, dude. He's my mitt holder. And so he's right there sweating his ass off and working just as hard as I am. And so I was like a little bummed out for him because, you know, not only did I expect to finish, and it was there, I think, but so did he. So, you know.
Is there anything you can point to of just why it didn't go the way you wanted to? I mean, did that cause you to make a slight adjustment in preparations for this matchup?
Well, for him, it was just he just wanted to get the takedown, so I had to be very cautious about that. And he was throwing a little bit, but he was throwing to defend himself, not to, like, hurt me. You know what I mean? So I had to be super conscious of the takedown.
Of course, the last time we talked, you mentioned about how you're not really a TV guy and that at that time you were reading a Tony Robbins book. So are you reading anything new now?
I am, actually. I'm reading this book. It's called... Why Men Don't Dance.
Okay.
My buddy, he's in a PhD program in like gender studies or something. And he let me borrow it. And it's like the history of the last like 120 years of dancing, from like social class, race, and all of this different stuff from like every single era. It's like, it's pretty interesting. It's something different that it's a book I wouldn't have picked out off the shelf, but it's cool to like read something that's something different from my world that I'm from.
So, are you not a dancer?
I'll dance. Yeah, I don't care.
I'm not a dancer.
No, yeah. Oh, I don't know how to dance, but I'll dance.
I'm more of the guy, if I'm in a nightclub, I'm probably hanging around the bar. I'm probably not necessarily on the dance floor. But you've got Georgia here. Obviously, Georgia, well-known name, World Series of Fighting champion, has come returned to Bellator after his first stint in here. What gets you excited about fighting Georgie?
He's tough, dude. He's tough. He's a veteran. He has a lot of experience. I'm not good with like standings and stuff. I don't really know, but I think he's like a top 10 guy maybe or something.
Oh, no question. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So it's something. I just want nothing but big fights. So this is like super cool. And then, you know, after like fighting the three top guys in the division and things not working out, and then having to fight somebody like, dude, Coley Bollinger, he's tough and this and that, but he just didn't have the name. And then, same thing with Nawad. And so now it's like, oh, okay, I'm doing something right, you know, after two wins. And it's like, I got another big name. So this is what I want.
And we talked about that last time. And I've always used the analogy of you are probably the guy that's had the toughest road entering Bellator of any fighter in Bellator history based on the first three opponents. But is there anything Georgie does that you would consider tricky?
Dude, I just started camp a couple weeks ago, so I've been so focused on just like laying the foundation and priming the brain for this camp that I haven't really watched too much tape on him. But I think this weekend or in one of these upcoming weeks, I'm gonna watch some tape on him.
If for you, a lot of it is just the first couple weeks of camp. Is it just about getting the mental side there and kind of getting back into, you know, that hard, you know, training? Is it more mental than physical?
Yeah, for right now, it's just getting the structure down from the camp, getting everything into play. And because you want to do, for me, I like to have structure, like everything's time, like at a specific time and this and that. So it takes, you know, it just makes it easier for me to get through this grind, you know.
I don't know if we're kind of similar in that way. I mean, like, I have to plan my day out. Like I say, hey, from this time, doing this. Is that pretty much just the way you are of, like, I need a schedule? If not, it's going to kind of fall off the tracks?
Yeah, big time. You know, you need pen to paper to really hold yourself accountable for your thoughts and actions. So
you mentioned about your coach, Eddie. And I remember last time we talked, you mentioned about how he was one of the reasons that you ultimately ended up at the MMA lab because of him getting a job there. You know, what type of relationship do you and Eddie have? Is it kind of like a best friend type, you know, relationship?
Dude, he's so cool. You know what I mean? For a coach, like he's open and honest enough to let me be his friend and stuff. But at the same time, if he has to like put his foot down and regulate on me, then he's still, you know, we have that mutual respect where mm-hmm. we kind of got best of both roles, dude. We're homies, but then when it's time to work, it's like, what's up, boss? What do you need me to do, you know?
Is Eddie your toughest critic or is it you?
Probably me, but yeah, him also too.
You mentioned about, I mean, Georgie's, you know, a guy that in Bellator considered one of the best 145ers there and where you're at currently. I mean, do you kind of look at this fight as kind of like, hey, this is a win here is going to get me back into, you know, that top five type fight?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking, dude.
Have you even allowed yourself to maybe even think ahead of like, okay, I get a win here. Have you even thought about maybe someone you might call out after the fight's over?
Not really, but I've taken some L's, so I definitely got vengeance on my mind for those. So, yeah, you know, that's crossed my mind where, you know, rack up some wins so I could get another crack at those guys under some better circumstances, you know?
And we mentioned about, you know, the full fight camp. I mean, is it one of those things, those three losses, that is it something that always kind of sticks in your memory? And do you believe that's a good thing?
No, it's definitely, yeah, technically it's in my memory because I fucking remember it and it's not going anywhere, but it's not something that haunts me. You know what I mean? If anything, it's something like, you know, like, hey, big dog, get to work, or, you know, get better, or this and that. So it's, if it haunts me, it's only for a positive, something positive.
You always hear fighters talk about motivation, you know, what drives them on a day in, day out basis. What would you say is your number one motivation?
I guess just, I like what I'm doing. I like my teammates here. I'm actually at the lab right now. We're about to spar. I'm first one here. Staying present, you know, because every single day here is fucking cool. You know, even if I'm dragging ass or I'm not feeling that well, it's still, I'm still lucky and grateful just to be able to compete and train with so many cool dudes. So I basically just really like this.
When you know, obviously everyone knows about the MMA lab and all the talented fighters there, and it made me kind of just think about Sean O'Malley this past weekend at the Ultimate Fighter, to see how he was able to deal with adversity from the second round to the third round. When you see that as a guy that is part of his team and you see how he has developed as a fighter, is that something that is it make you kind of think about, okay, I might find myself in that situation, and look how Sean handled himself?
Yeah, man, it's, I don't know, for me, like, I'm super proud of my teammates. Like, when they win, I'm actually happier for them than when I win. Like, when I win, I'm just like, fuck, whatever, what's next? Like, there's something in me that doesn't let me really fucking soak it all in. But when my teammates, you know, win, and, like, this young kid, and there's so many others like him here, and it's just like, it's pretty cool, man.
Is it tough to watch your teammates fight?
Yeah, it is, dude. It actually is. But it's cool, though.
Is it just one of those things of you're like, man, I just can't control it, and it's kind of that emotion of like, oh, man, I hope we can pull this out?
Yeah, that, and I get more nervous for them than when I actually fight, which is pretty weird.
Do you not get nervous at all when you fight?
Not really. We've been working on that the last couple fights to actually, like kind of make myself get nervous, warm up a little bit more in the back, think about the fight. Like before, like, I was just like, fuck it, dude, I'm gonna fight this guy real quick, you know what I mean? Like, it just wasn't that big of a deal for me. And so I think now, like, you know, after so many fights, like, I'm falling more in love with the sport. Mm-hmm. And so there's more on the line, and there's more like little nerves and excitement, which is pretty cool.
Final thing here. Do you have a walkout song picked out to walk out to here in a couple weeks?
My favorite album of all time is Jedi Mind Tricks' Violent by Design, which is like, dude, every single fucking song on that album is like super violent, gory, disgusting. And so I'm definitely going to be walking out to something out of there.
And of course, we're all going to be able to see this fight here coming up on January 20th, Bellator 192. Of course, that's going to kick off the heavyweight tournament. Plus, you got Douglas Lima defending the welterweight title against Rory McDonald. Henry, as always, I appreciate your time. And let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
Hey, thanks for having me, dude. Hit me up on Henry Krause.
And there you have my conversations with Henry Corrales and Kyle Bochniak. I appreciate both those fighters coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Talk about our fights that are going to take place there on January 20th. Of course, Kyle will be fighting at UFC 220, and Henry will be fighting at Bellator 192. Now, I do want to answer one question I did get in relation to UFC 219 that I was unable to get in when I had Daniel on, and that came from Chris. He says, where do you rank home in terms of female GOAT, if she beats Cyborg, would be a two-vision champ, beat Ronda and Cyborg. And if she does get the win, I think you probably do have to consider her the greatest of all time just because of being Ronda Rousey and Chris Cyborg. But we're going to see what happens on Saturday night, UFC 219. I am looking forward to this pay-per-view. You know, obviously really looking forward to the main event and co-main event of that fight card. Also interested to see the return of Carlos Condit. One other note I'll mention here before I get out of here. Cowboy Cerrone is going to take on Yancy Medeiros in the main event of UFC Fight Night 126. That is going to be the fight card that is going to be taking place in Austin, Texas in February the 18th. So there you have a nice little main event matchup there. Should be a great fight there between Cowboy and Yancy Medeiros. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, appreciate you taking some time out to listen to myself and Daniel talk about everything going on in the world of MMA. So that's going to do it for the MMA Report Podcast, which you hear every week on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I want to welcome this week, Sitting Ringside, my guest, Bill DeMott. Tell me about Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, because I, you know, so much, there's so much to say about them, but, you know, and there's so many stories, but, you know, I made you promise to do this that we had to tell three public enemy stories, but looking back, what are your thoughts? Because, you know, two pure-hearted guys. One's a class act, and the other one's a kind of a screw up. And I love Johnny Grunge. I spoke at his funeral, but you know, it is what it is. So tell me what your memories are.
I mean, they were just good guys. And I was thinking about the other night when you said that. I was like, I probably only one story that I would share about them that everybody should get a kick out of was the time we got fired in Florida.
Stealing the van?
So what happened was, in my sobriety over the years, what happened was we had went to the front desk looking for a ride to whatever cowboy bar, whatever the place was where everybody was going. And the guy at the front desk said, the company van is right in the parking lot. Here's the keys. You don't have to give us keys to anything twice. We're gone. So at the time, on the tag-along was Crowbar, Chris Ford, another Jersey boy who we'd helped get in, and he was getting a break during that you know, tapings. So the four of us got in the van, and we took off. Well, one thing leads to another. We do what we do. So we're out all night. Teddy's driving. He's the responsible one.
Always.
We got back to the hotel, but we parked the van in front of the door of the hotel. And when I say in front of the door, I mean in front of the door, up the lawn, over the sidewalks, in front of the door. But we knew we brought the van back. We all went to bed. Because we literally had to be up in 3 hours for the tapings or whatever the case was.
Sure.
Well, the phone rings. Grunge got arrested because he took the van and wanted something to eat. Well, he drove the wrong, you know, the whole thing is drove the wrong way through the McDonald's, drove backwards through the drive-through, a little bit of damage there, asked an ossifer, you know, where he could continue his evening. That officer wasn't very pleased. One thing led to another. Grunge was arrested. Teddy was called to bail him out. Sullivan was up in arms. The show was in Lakeland that night. Everybody was woken up. It was a big deal. We got into Lakeland, and I was working one of those nights where the Dungeon was in the main event with the Horsemen or something. I was working with Pillman and Arn. But Sullivan had pulled us in and fired us on the spot. Cussed us, pillar the post, because Crockett threw a fit that we stole his van and did all this damage to his all this damage to his van and everything, and we just played innocent, but we were guilty of sin. We got fired that night. I wrestled, and then we were done. So it was a quiet trip, and Ted Petty threatened our lives. So help me God, I'm going to kill you both. You're done. Don't say a word. Shut your mouths. Don't say a word the whole way back. Pack your bag, get on a plane, and when we get home, I'm going to kill you. You know, that's how the conversation went. And so we were fired in Lakeland. We got back to the property, and it was, you know, like you said, everybody was there. It's the same hotel and people by the pool and drinking, and we were there. Everybody's giggling. And I said, you know, look at the three idiots. Bischoff has stopped us, said, you guys stole that van? Yeah. That's the funniest thing I've ever heard. That's the funniest thing I ever heard. Crocker was so pissed off. You guys are great. You make it fun or something, you know, something along those lines. I mean, the dudes look at each other like, what? Hey, you're not fired. Just, you know, how about we don't do that again? That kind of talk, you know? So Bischoff walks away.
Go ahead.
The three of us, somebody came and handed three of us a beer and we stood there. So Grunge right away, I told you, Papi, I told you everything was going to be fine. I told you. I'm sitting there sweating. And then Teddy's standing the whole time, don't say a word, the two of you. Don't say a word. Don't say a word the rest of the night. I'll kill you both.
Oh, my God.
But it was the, you know, but in between, it was the, and Crowbar has a great version of the night. And the night was just, you know, it was one of those things. Grunge and I walk into a bar and Arn said some guy was making fun of him. And I said, which one? And Pillman pointed to one guy. And I laid one guy out, and Pillman goes, no, it wasn't him, it was the other guy, and I laid another guy out. And the bouncer goes, he went out this door, and we run out the door, and they locked us out of the bar because I just kept dropping people because they told me that was the guy who was giving Arn a hard time. But it was just one of many nights, the excursions of Pineapple Pete's and all those things. But at the end of the day, it was just three guys who knew each other really well who started and you know, whatever notoriety we got in our careers, we always tried to keep each other grounded. And, you know, as everybody moved on from WCW and stuff, we were all in touch all the time. And just heartbreaking, both of them, just heartbreaking to have them gone early. But they were the best.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.